This meeting is being recorded. It's June 2nd, the Ulster County Traffic Safety Board at 6:05 PM.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Dave Corrigan. I'll be filling in for Mr. Kite tonight here at the Ulster County Traffic Safety Board. Let's go a quick round of introductions. Dave Corrigan, New York State Department of Transportation, Ulster County.
Rose Quinn, City of Kingston resident and representative for Families for Safe Streets.
Adam Dietz, Ulster County Department of Public Works.
Jonna Russo, Mid-Hudson Transportation Association, representing school bus drivers of Ulster County.
Brian Slack, Ulster County Transportation Council, and I'm coordinator for the board.
Judy Otenti, City Kingston Police.
Mark Cassidy, Town of Rosendale.
Guest section.
I may be joining you folks if the legislature blesses me.
Kevin Smith, Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee.
All right, thank you, everybody. So if we want to take just a minute to read through the approval of the draft minutes from the previous meeting. Anybody has any comments or concerns? Take any motions?
Just one note, Brendan Masterson did want me to note that Adam was here on his behalf and he understands that Adam is a non-voting member.
Are we seconding?
Was there a motion?
I'll second.
I think you made the first motion. Anybody second?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll take the motion.
Second.
Second from Rosemary. Great.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Jump right in. Public comments?
Kevin Smith, Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee. I also am board chair of Woodstock Land Conservancy. We're involved in advocating for rail trail in the Ulster-Delaware corridor connected to the countywide network. So very much involved in the current deliberations that are going on in the legislature, moving from the UND Corridor Advisory Committee now to the Housing Transportation Committee. There's a resolution 275, which is before that committee, regarding the so-called undesignated section. I wanted to first thank you all for the resolution that you approved, I guess, a couple of meetings ago, calling on the legislature and the county executive to prioritize trail connectivity in the UND corridor on the basis of traffic safety and with particular reference to Route 28 and with statistics on the dangers there and just the dangers for people on highways that are functioning at that at that speed for persons outside motor vehicles. I'm here tonight, sadly, because I became aware when a social media post was forwarded to me a week and a half ago that there was a hit-and-run crash on Route 28 on Tuesday, the 20th of May. A woman had posted it. It was her friend that was hit and was taken to Health Alliance Hospital. And she was asking for anybody that had any knowledge to call her. Anybody that had dash cam footage, surveillance cameras, eyewitnesses. And so I called her and found out what happened. I've now spoken to the gentleman involved. His name is Daniel O'Day. He is a resident of the Motel 19. I believe he's on housing assistance of some kind. Bicycle is his sole transport other than transit with UCAP. And he gets around by bike. He was on his way up Route 28 to visit a friend in Woodstock who lives on Zena Road. He was pedaling on the shoulder outside the white line, just about opposite the Woodstock Harley-Davidson establishment in front of Dollar General Kingston Collision. And all of a sudden, he felt an impact on his left thigh, and his left arm got hit by the side mirror. He thinks it was a truck, but he's not sure. Next thing, he was down. His femur was badly fractured. They took him to Health Alliance, x-rayed him, immediately determined that they did not have the ability to operate on his femur, so they ambulanced him down to Westchester. Probably not a fun ride. Where he was operated on, fortunately, by one of their best surgeons. He's just, I think last weekend, got transferred back up here. He's at Timbrook Commons Nursing Rehab Facility now. He said he's doing well, considering. He's just at the start of his rehab. And you've heard me here. I've spoken to the UND committee about this, that the county has an opportunity to make a difference to protect vulnerable road users that could, many of them, be on a safe, protected facility away from Route 28. And it's one of those rare opportunities where the county really has control of the facility, unlike Route 28, which is a state highway. And so I told him I was coming here. He asked about a couple of things. About Route 28, he said he wondered if they could have rumble strips put on the white lines. He doesn't know if the person that hit him was distracted and drifted over the white line, or if, God forbid, it was deliberate. But he wonders if that is something that could be done to make things somewhat safer for people that are on bike or walking. The other thing he asked about was a pedestrian crosswalk right there at Motel 19. I forgot the name. Is it Evergreen Terrace?
Forest Hill Drive.
Forest Hill Drive. Thank you. We know there's been fatalities at that very crossing, pedestrian fatalities. He asked that I convey that to you all. I just want to make sure that I thank you for passing that resolution. I know it was not nothing for this board to take that action. It definitely made a difference in the legislature and with executive staff. I think that's pretty much it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin.
So if I could just chime in, as a frequent user of Route 28, first of all, I'm just so sorry. And I'm glad that you are working directly with him, because...
And thank you for offering assistance. You've been totally great. I really appreciate that, Rose.
So it's a couple of you know, concerns. One, Route 28, of course, is more and more are being traveled by people who are walking and biking. I see them all the time when I'm going down that corridor. I see people waiting for the bus. I see people running across four lanes of traffic because they've gotten off the bus and they've got to get to the other side, and there's scant few places to cross. So there's that, and yeah, I think that you know, if we have the opportunity to prioritize a safe route for people to get out of Kingston, including me, I think that is just absolutely needs to be completely a priority. The other thing I'm concerned about is, you know, consistently we're seeing that crashes are falling kind of through, in, you know, black holes here. Like, they're not making it into the media. And when they do make it into the media, sometimes the reporting is a little sketchy, to say the least. And we're not getting the accurate reporting that we really need, not only, you know, for the importance of the victim, but also so that we can keep track of this stuff and make sure that we're addressing it. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's state PD that's handling that particular investigation.
It's New York State Police Department.
I would want to know what the decision making was there to not. There was a hit and run, and it would seem to me that a crime was committed, and that should have made it into the media. So I think that's a question worth asking. It kind of brings us back to, why don't we have some kind of protocol or task force in place so that when someone is hit, there is this protocol that happens and there's a media release, there's, you know, if there's a trauma, a person goes immediately into a, again, you know, it reminds me of Gary White, like, why are we putting people who have been struck by cars into ambulances when they should go into the helicopters that we do have? You're right, that was probably an absolutely agonizing trip for him and probably needless. Had there been a protocol in place that said that if you're hit by a car, that is a traumatic, unless you absolutely refuse, that is a traumatic enough event that you should go to the nearest trauma center, case closed. So those are just my, you know, some of my thoughts on that. It's always so disturbing to me when we find out after the fact that crashes happen. And I just hope we can do better with this in the future. So thank you for sharing.
If I might, you know, if it hadn't been for the social media post that somebody I knew saw and then sent that to me, I wouldn't have known about it and I wouldn't have been able to share it with you all. And it's hard to escape the sense that somebody has to die for it to make the newspaper, which is a horrible.
Well, in Gary's what he didn't even warrant it.
Yeah. So you know, and Mr. O'Day deserves. It's unfathomable given what the county's been dealing with the spate of fatalities on our roadways, including hit and runs, that at this point, that this is not something that like got everybody's attention in whatever positions that they're in officially, and that action really happened, because it's a criminal action, and I'm sure there's a criminal investigation going on, and the public needs to know, because there might be members of the public that have information.
I think it would be appropriate for the Traffic Safety Board to reach out to the state police and inquire about the investigation and if they are pursuing leads. But to your point, Rose, why wasn't it publicized? Do we only get to hear about crashes when somebody dies? I mean, I think there's an important public safety message that can be put out as well, and that crashes are occurring and people, you know, need to slow down and take precautions, but also that it would be good if the public were aware, so that if there were witnesses, they would know to come forward.
Yeah.
Sometimes you witness a crash and you don't figure, well, somebody else will call, and you may have information that you may not offer because you just assume it's not needed. So I'm happy to do that. I'd be very curious to see what the state police's response is. I don't have a contact at New York State Police right now, but I'll find one.
Thank you, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish we could bring Mike Kelly back.
Who was Mike Kelly? You'll have to.
Mike was everybody's favorite trooper.
Yeah,
he was a good guy. I frequently ride a loop from my house that involves coming north on Early Mountain Road, and I ride that stretch of road that we're talking about now, and it's terrifying. I don't know how the folks who don't have bike skills and lights and reflectors and everything else get across the two ramps that it takes to get from Forest Hills to the throughway overpass, where now you're finally in some sort of a safe zone. It's just plain terrifying. And I mean, I'm not saying that a bicycle, even though it's a vehicle, should have the priority on a 45 mile an hour road, but those merges are just plain awful, and I don't know what it would take to make them safe. But merge ramps, unfortunately, have become really terrifying. In my car today, the roundabout is posted, warning, not black and white, with a yellow 20 miles an hour, and someone in an Audi or God knows what kind of sports sedan came wheeling around it as I was attempting to merge into the traffic, and it was within millimeters. Just plain terrifying. I don't know what you can do. Now, bring it closer to home, where I live in Rosendale, and one of the reasons I'm here is in the probably the last 10 or 11 years, within 8 miles of my house, there's been three fatalities. Two on Lucas Avenue, one on Route 213. One was a college professor who retired here from Illinois for the cycling. He didn't last a year, and he was killed by a driver who was blinded by the sun on Lucas Avenue. Well, if you're blinded, put the damn visor down, or slow down, or stop if you can't see. Another was a person, an indigent person, who had only a bicycle for transportation, who was killed on Thanksgiving evening.
Yeah, Richard Dems.
And the third.
And I just want to just, Richard was not indigent. He worked, he commuted on that bicycle from Ellenville to Kingston quite regularly. He just made a determination in his life. I know his family, and you know they wouldn't like that portrayal of him. I can tell you that wasn't Richard. So
I just assumed because that was his transportation.
Yeah.
Story. We all make assumptions. And the third was a person who had a couple of DWIs, used a bicycle as his only transportation. His brother-in-law got into some sort of argument with him. He went to teach him a lesson by swerving his truck at him, hit him with the mirror, and killed him. And this is all like in 10 or 11 years. It's crazy. Now, I'm not saying that the highway system is in any way responsible for people's behavior, but when corpses are piling up, the public sort of wants action, and that's one of the reasons I'm here, applying for this position, that maybe it's possible to make some sort of effect.
Yeah, those ramps are, I used to ride out from Kingston to Mount Tremper every Sunday morning. I it was one of my favorite things to do. I would ride out on 28 and then come back on the back roads. I wouldn't in a million years do it now. The traffic has increased so much. And just the other day going to work, there was a crash. It must have just happened moments before. And I know enough to see a scene and say, oh, this is a fresh scene, I better slow down, but most people don't, so they're going pretty fast, and there were emergency workers running across the four-lane part of the road. It was, I think, just a little bit before where the Stewart's is. So, there was two Kingston High School students who were killed in Mount Tremper. That whole stretch is just remarkably dangerous. I just don't know how else to put it.
I spend more time on a bicycle than most people, I think, work full time. In my household, we probably total 10,000 miles a year. We see the best of it, we see the worst of it. And we're skilled to deal with most of it. Unfortunately, a lot of traveling, the non-motorized transportation folks in this world don't have those advantages. And I don't know if it's a matter of education, legislation, I don't know. It's the three-legged stool. But willing to delve into it.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Kevin, just to touch on that, I will look into the rumble strip standard. I know we do have it along 32 for the Empire State Trail.
That's
a little, a slightly different scenario, but I'll see what the story is. As far as a pedestrian crosswalk, anything like that would come from the local municipality in the form of a resolution requested to the department. So the town of Ulster would be
they would need to pass that resolution.
Yeah, but somebody could get to the town board on the town of Ulster and have them pass that resolution for us to take a look at it to see if it is something that we would do. I know that they're looking at one at the intersection where the Romeo Ford is for the new housing development, because they anticipate that is going to also generate a fair amount of pedestrian traffic. The town actually at that particular location, I think, is willing to take out the permit and install the pedestrian crossing to get people over. I don't know if that's actually, I don't know what the county's plans are, if they want to try to get people kind of on the other side of that, not use the the 19 facilities much anymore. I'm not sure.
It's not largely within the county's purview
yeah.
at this point. I mean, we've had discussions with RUPCO, with the DOT. You've been at the table.
Yep.
But I do have some updates that I'll mention later on regarding the general area.
Okay.
But 28 does have centerline rumble strips in the two-lane portion. Obviously, this crash occurred in the four-lane portion. New York State DOT has a $90 million program right now called the Roadway Departure Program, and they will be identifying locations in Ulster County for improvements to do a variety of standard proven safety countermeasures, which among them include rumble strips. We don't know the locations of those improvements at this time.
I do want to just very quickly remind people, though, that rumble strips are absolutely great for cars. They're not so great for cyclists. Case in point, Route 32. So when we're putting rumble strips down, you have to remember that if that is compromising the space of the cyclist, that's actually not a good fix for the cyclist. Mm-hmm. And by the time the driver has breached that, it's probably too late anyway.
Right. And 32, so. The contractor did a very poor job installing those. It's my understanding. Mm-hmm. I don't know that from a cyclist perspective, but I do understand.
In general, on 28, the shoulder's much more ample. But
that's
there
true.
Are pinch points.
Yeah.
And those pinch points would be where I think Rose's concern would be really valid.
On a trip to Yellowstone, we did a ride that went from Montana into Wyoming, did the loop and a little loop and a little bit in Idaho. It was a 70 mile an hour speed limit road with rumble strips where the edge line was, and then about 12 inches of blacktop. It was terrifying. So that I guess is a standard we don't want. But what I have observed, and I think it may be State DOT, they may be Thruway Authority, I'm not sure, is there some sort of agent in the edge line paint that is coarse and makes a roar or a sound.
It's inlaid striping.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, they're milling a very small groove to recess the striping below the plow and below that wear line. And that's what you hear on the through that kind of noise that you go over. It's an inlay. And 28 is, I'll get into that. My member updates, 28 is scheduled to be paid next year, and we will be doing it late striping on the segments that are getting paid.
It's not a flashing alarm, but at least it's a cue that you're straight.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And it'll actually allow that the pavement markings last a lot longer on that, which is another safety benefit. So we're going to jump out of public comments.
Bruce,
we'll to member updates before
Bruce,
we do.
We had
a gentleman join us at the end, give him an opportunity to introduce himself, and we could maybe do some quick introductions as well.
Great. Yes, thank you. So for those that don't know me, I'm County Legislator Aaron Levine, representing District 1, including portions of the town of Saugerties and Woodstock. I'm here today. I had reached out to Brian regarding being happy to speak about my proposed legislation for a safe passage law for pedestrians and cyclists in Ulster County, looking at passing a local law that's going to require a 3-foot safe passing distance for vehicles that are passing cyclists and pedestrians. New York State, currently is one of only 9 states that does not have a statewide minimum distance requirement for passing a cyclist. The other 8 are Alaska, Idaho, Iowa, Missouri, Montana, New Mexico, Texas, and South Carolina. I don't think that's necessary. No offense to these other states, but these are states that I don't think that we necessarily want to, some of their policies on pedestrian and cyclist safety, I don't think we necessarily want to be in league with them. I think that also when we look at, there's been a recent enactment of 4-foot minimum passing laws in Massachusetts and Vermont. So New York is surrounded by states that require at least a 3-foot or greater distance for passing. And on the state level, recently, the three-foot passage bill passed the state Senate, but it has unfortunately been held up in the Assembly year after year. It's been carried by Assemblymember Phil Steck of the Albany region, but it has been held up in the Transportation Committee. So a number of counties throughout the state have kind of taken their own initiative on this to kind of not wait on the state's inaction on this, including Suffolk and Monroe counties that have passed this three-foot safe passing legislation. And Albany County, I believe, either has recently passed or is in the process of having it go through their legislature review by their county executive of doing this as well. So Ulster County, I think, should follow in the footsteps of these other counties. And, you know, if the state is going to drag their heels and their feet on this, there's really no reason why we can't take the initiative and try to do this on the county level here in Ulster. As we've all known, you know, as has been spoken about earlier in this meeting, and we all are aware of, previously of the epidemic of pedestrian and cyclist, injuries and fatalities that we've been dealing with over the last number of years in our communities. And this legislation would not be a panacea, but it would most certainly make at least some difference in hopefully saving people's lives and preventing injuries as well. So this is a local law that I'm putting forward. It is right now proposed for a public hearing before our July legislative session. And so it's going to, that's going to be the beginning of the process to get public comment on this, at a public hearing. And, it would hopefully then in August be able to be passed by the legislature and then considered by the county executive going forward. So if anybody has any questions or comments, I'd be happy to kind of discuss, be happy to open that up.
That was quite an introduction.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
For the sake of the legislator's time, I'd like to propose that we move this item from new business right up to the agenda right now.
Absolutely.
Above member updates.
Yep, absolutely.
Great. Why don't we just run around and do introductions real quick? Do you care to start, Dave?
Sure. I'm Dave Corrigan. I'm the vice chairman of the Traffic Safety Board. I work for the New York State Department of Transportation. I'm the local resident engineer here stationed right in Kingston.
Hi, I am Rose Quinn. I am a Kingston resident. I also am employed by the New York State Bike Coalition, so we do a lot of work surrounding this. We were just in Albany on the 13th, and you're absolutely right. It passed once again in the Senate and probably will get held up in the Assembly. So I'm very interested in hearing more about this proposal. So thanks.
Madam Dietz, I'm work for Ulster County Department of Public Works. Sending it for Brendan Masterson, Commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Hi, John Russo. I'm with the Mid-Hudson School Transportation Supervisors Association, representing the supervisors as well as school bus drivers.
And I'm Brian Slack, Ulster County Transportation Council and Coordinator for the board.
Judeo Tenti, City Kingston, please. Mark Cassidy, I'm a councilman in Rosendale.
I should note, our guests, go ahead and introduce yourselves, because they are notable guests.
member in waiting to be appointed when you folks approve.
Kevin Smith, we know each other.
Duly noted, yes, absolutely.
Aaron, do you have a resolution number?
I have it.
Yep.
I have copies right here, which I'll circulate right now.
Thank you.
Printed my own.
And it's about time. The holdup in the legislature, as I understand it, after talking with the Bike Coalition 10, 12, 15 years ago, is New York City.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a carve-out for New York City now. They're still going to go what is the standard again? An acceptable distance.
Mm-hmm. Prudent or something like that?
Yeah. In New York City, I think there is a fair argument that, you might be waiting an awful long time if you're waiting to go to give 3 feet. And also, it would just be really hard to get it past the Taxi and Limousine Commission down there. But so that's the carve-out in New York City. But it's one of the most frustrating things, you know, legislature, but we've been fighting for this for I don't even know how long, and it consists, first it was being held up by a legislator from Rochester. He has since passed, and unfortunately it's still being held up. It can't get out of committee. It's got the votes. It can't get out of committee, and it's so frustrating. So that's just one of the kind of tricks that I've learned that, you know, it is really an amazing thing when it's like, you know, lots of people say they'll vote for it, but one or two legislators, and there is one identified and one unidentified who we can't really, and that happens a lot also, who are just kind of holding everything up.
And my understanding also is that there's a, you know, an exemption from this law for you know, any road that has a bike lane. You know, so any marked bike lane, you know, this would, you know, you would not have to necessarily give 3 feet of clearance to a cyclist that's using a bike lane. So and New York City, you know, a lot of the roads do have bike lanes on them.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that there, you know, I my personal view on it is, I don't think that argument against it holds water, you know, mm-hmm. on the state, you know, that they're saying that it's going to unduly impact a lot of you know, road users and vehicles, because there are so many bike lanes already, you know, that have been put, you know, they've been installed all throughout the city, It's very frustrating, but you know, that, again, there's no reason why we can't, you know, take the initiative on this and not wait for them. And there are other, I mean, the argument on states with large urban areas, I mean, you know, Massachusetts on 4 foot. I mean, Boston, you can't tell me that, you know, that there are not areas in Boston that are, you know, narrow roads and things like that, and they are able to get this done. California, I mean, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Illinois, Chicago, I mean, so this is not an insurmountable obstacle in terms of like, well, we're just going to throw our hands up and say, can't do it, you know, so it's, I'm very frustrated by the state's kind of lack of initiative on this, but it was just something that I thought if they're going to continue to drag their heels, then obviously, again, we've seen the, you know, the instances of fatalities and pedestrian and cyclist injuries here. We need to do what we can to prevent it. So let's put our heads together and get it done.
Yeah, and just one more interesting thing about this, because one of the things that people will say is, well, it's not enforceable and you can't really. So by that standard, what's the point? Actually, there is now technology that's really seriously being developed that someone would put in their handles, in their bike, on their handlebars. And if there was a crash, it could tell, like, was that person, like, passed at a very close distance. And they're not really using it for the law yet. That's not really the thought. The thought is to get data on close passes on dangerous roads. So that's why they're thinking of developing these and having people use them. But, I mean, you know, in theory, in the future, a cyclist who's got the means could put one of these in their bicycle. And if, God forbid, they are hit, that would demonstrate whether or not the driver gave them 3 feet. So it's interesting development that could change what the biggest argument we always hear is, which is it's not enforceable. That's always what we hear. That's the problem. It's not enforceable. And no matter how often we try to say this is really not an enforcement measure, it's an education and a standard measure, it always seems to come back to it's not enforceable.
What Rose is saying is interesting. My partner has very bad hearing, and it's almost impossible to ride with hearing aids. We use a radar system that buzzes your wrist when a car is approaching. It's a short step from Garmin radar to the crash detection that Rose is talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the technology, unfortunately, with tariffs, who knows where it's going, but that's the sort of technology that would come from China.
So the proposed resolution is actually for a public hearing?
So yes, it's a multi-step process. The resolution that's going to be considered in the Housing and Transportation Committee on Thursday is to set the public hearing for July. That's correct.
Okay.
Assuming that passes and the legislature, passes it in our June session, it would set the public hearing for July, which would then allow the local law, which would then have another. Resolution which would basically be enacting the local law.
Just in terms of procedure, having never attended a public hearing of that type, are they usually held in concert with a legislative session?
Yes.
Or? Okay.
So it'll be before it's the public hearing will usually be at like 7:05. They usually allocate. Sometimes there are multiple public hearings in a row. You know, they usually go 7:05. And that's not to say it limits it at the 5 minutes of, but they just kind of schedule it that way. Mm-hmm. So it would be scheduled before the legislative session. So between 7 and 7:15 on the third Tuesday of July, if that's what I believe the resolution on the Housing and Transportation Committee on Thursday is setting the date for.
So I'm curious to know how you feel the public should be informed. Is if this becomes law, how would we inform members of the driving public that this is the law in Ulster County?
So that's a very good question. I would think that it's going to have to be a multi-pronged approach through social media. Also, through hopefully collaboration with a number of our municipalities, whether it's something that they want to, whether they're going to put some type of notice in their town or village halls, I'm assuming also the county executive would be willing to be putting out and hopefully in consultation with the traffic safety board, some type of press release, and also working with the sheriff's department and our local law enforcement agencies to try to. Either through social media or I'm not sure if sending out some type of
alert
right. through the mail or something. I mean that probably is pretty costly. Mm-hmm. If we were sending some like a postcard or something to folks in the mail, it would be great, but I don't know how logistically feasible it is. But it is something that I'd be happy to kind of I would be happy to reach out to Monroe County, the folks over in Monroe and Suffolk, to see in terms of their public awareness how they were able to kind of do that after they passed that law. I would be happy to research that in the time between now and the potential public hearing for sure.
Section AD, any other individuals existing upon a roadway and outside of any vehicle, that's pretty much anybody else walking.
Yeah.
Walking, sure.
Or using a mobility, at least that's the one we're proposing, walking or using a mobility device.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That covers everyone? Everybody who's walking, is that what I'm understanding here?
Yeah, so... I believe it's attempting to cover like roller skates, roller blades,
okay.
Skateboards, unicycles, longboards, things of that nature. Yes, agricultural equipment. Yes.
I apologize. I didn't go deep enough and circulate the actual draft law. I just circulated the
link.
The link to the public meeting.
Is the draft on the legislature website?
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah.
And the link is on the agenda as well.
Yeah. And there just for information also, there was a question as to the enforceability of this in regards to if we would have the ability to enforce this only on county roads, or if we would be able to do it on all roads within the jurisdiction of Ulster County. And I believe an opinion was solicited from the county attorney's office, and the understanding is that we would be able to enforce this on all roads in Ulster County and not just on county routes. So that's something that I was hoping would be the case, because while yes, it would be helpful if we were able to do something for county routes, I mean, obviously most of the roads in Ulster County are not under the jurisdiction of our county highway department. So I was very happy to see that.
That would have created even more confusion.
Yes.
Yeah, trying to identify which roads, because most people don't really care who the maintenance jurisdiction is.
Mm-hmm.
But it begs the question, I don't know how would an officer enforce it? It would have to be field judgment and witnesses.
Yeah.
I imagine it would be difficult. But you made a good point during the last meeting, Rose, that
mm-hmm.
it's not necessarily about enforcement. It's really about awareness, I think you had said.
Yeah.
You got to move over. That's the point you're trying to get across.
Yeah. Well, you're setting – there's a couple of – so Ulster County, since we, I'm assuming, are in charge of our own DMV – right, I mean, it's state, but it's also, I mean, so you could do this through DMV, like you could send out the message, right, that Ulster County is now a 3-foot passing state. So, I mean, I'm county. So, it's really, I think, unfortunately, because of the constant holdups with it, I actually think it's a really good approach for municipalities to be setting their own standard. I do. And even if you can't write a ticket for it, you can say, you know, when you take the road test, that you need to understand what the state, like, now, I've said this before, I used to teach the impaired driving program, and we used to spend some time about, like, you know, how do you handle vulnerable road users? And they would say, well, what do you do when you come up on a cyclist? And of course, the first thing I would say is, please slow down. And then I would say, well, you know, the best practice is to give 3 or 4 feet. But it wasn't like, this is the law. It wasn't like, this is what they say to do. It was, this is the suggestion, right? And I think people really do want that clear guidance, you know, and we could be giving young people that clear guidance right from the beginning. You know, we could... That I think that's important.
If it's in the DMV guidance and mm-hmm. part of the driver's ed, absolutely.
Yeah. And then if you add on to it, if this new technology really does, you know, turn into something that could be used in a court of law, you add on to it that now you actually at least, got, you know, it's worst case scenario, but if someone gets hit, you've got the proof in court right there that person did not give a safe amount of distance.
Yeah, it's, at so, that point.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear.
But for the gentleman on Route 28, you know, that would be really helpful. You know, he's still alive, and, you know, this person could be really held accountable in a different level than just, oh, because too often what happens is it's just word of mouth, right? The driver is like, well, I just didn't see him. And the courts kind of go with that, right? And so now you couldn't just say, well, you know, there is a standard here. Like, you can't just say, well, I just didn't see that car that I drove into, right? You're not allowed to say that. So this is kind of put it in the same.
The only other question I would have in terms of implementation is, or maybe it's not really implementation, it's, I guess, the issue of enforcement again, is if you have a double yellow line, the cyclist has the right to the lane. We know that. So does the motorist have a right to pass across a double yellow?
Yes.
In order to go around,
it's just
safely.
Like a slow moving vehicle. Yes,
slow,
we've asked that many times.
Slow moving vehicle.
It's a slow moving vehicle.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. And just in response to the question on public awareness, I forgot to bring this up, but I actually when I recently took a trip through the Berkshires. Going down Route 23 over past Catamount Mountain right over there. And literally not even 500 yards over the Massachusetts state line as you're driving on Route 23, I think the first or the second sign that you see on the side of the road It is a white sign that says, motorists give 4 feet to pass.
I've stopped and taken pictures of those signs.
So literally, as you, like, as soon as you cross the state line, that's the first sign that you see. So that's something that I would think that we might be able to work on in high traffic county route on county roads, that we would be able to hopefully look at installation of a similar sign like this to make people aware that this is a county law, that there's going to be a 3 foot passing distance for cyclists and pedestrians. So if a very clear sign like this seems like it would be something that would not be out of the realm of possibility that we could look at trying to install on heavily trafficked roads in Ulster County.
You could put it somewhere where people are exiting the freeway exits too. That was always one that I mean, you can't give out information that's what I used to say. Well, you could give out information as people are getting off the thruway, but you don't do that anymore. So, but there could be signs really where people are getting off the thruway, because that's where outsiders are often entering Ulster County. So
I got one I can divide between the two sides of the room here. I think in the national MUTCD, black and white is enforceable.
It is. It's a regulatory sign. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
So and that's what that sign is making.
It's not yellow and black advisory.
No, that's advising of a law.
Yep.
Right.
That's exactly what that sign is.
And my dream, after years of seeing those expect a bike ahead signs that are, I think, well-intentioned, but I don't think terribly effective, that a couple of the lawyers have been providing the funding for, I've dreamed of this. I'm jumping the gun here on what will possibly be a seat at the table someday.
Well,
it's a simple declarative sentence that tells the motorist what to do and why to do it. But getting this to be now, so here's my question: if Massachusetts can be outside of the national MUTCD, what stops New York State or us from doing this?
Every state has a New York State supplement. That sign can absolutely be incorporated into New York State law. That's not a problem. You have the national, and then each state has particular signs. They don't have signs for snow in Florida. That's a different sign. So, yeah, there's nothing to say that it can't be done. It just, what I wouldn't be sure of, I'm sure you could install them right off the get-go at any town and local road. I don't know if you could put them coming off the thruway onto a state highway if there isn't a state law. That would be a bit of a debate that would have to be ironed out.
Yeah.
So, but on county roads, all your county roads leading into Ulster County, that should be one of the first or second signs you would have, absolutely.
But just to clarify, this is a totally legitimate sign. And I do not understand why it is not everywhere. Because this is the law right now.
Yeah, it has a reference to V&T.
You know, you will see this in some places. Instead, you'll see the share. I think the share the lane markings are a little confusing.
It's very. It's the same design.
Yep, and it's just very clear. You know, the cyclist can use the lane, and that does exist. And not that, you know, and I just not that that's not a great idea, Nick. But I'm just saying, like, we don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel. There is some good, strong messaging already out there. Yeah. I mean, the problem is like, if we were ever enforcing the safe distance, then, you know, it would be fine. Or, you know, if we were ever really, but we're not, you know, like, it's completely fallen through the cracks, because there is nothing there to kind of, I think anyway, to regulate it and standardize it. So
if you have a clearance specification like that sign says, is it de facto that you're guilty of an infraction if you hit and knock down a cyclist within the right of way? How does that work?
It's up to the responding officer, I would imagine, if there is one.
Yeah, it's not an automatic.
I mean, I've had friends hit in the crosswalk, and they weren't seriously injured, but the responding PD chose not to ticket.
Yeah, That's interesting.
But we would know you didn't give them 3 feet of clearance if you if you hit them.
And that's why I'm saying de facto.
They would have the ability, yeah, to charge that if this is on the books. So, and the county sheriff's office, I spoke to the sheriff, and he's in full support of this and would be willing to be letting all of the road patrols enforce this. He's on the record as telling me that he has no objection to this.
And Sergeant Vetter of the Sheriff's Department is a member of the Traffic Safety Board. He's usually here, but he had to cancel last minute.
No, yeah. No problem.
So the second tier of justice, then, one could be criminal, it could be an infraction, but the other, which maybe is more powerful, is civil against the operator of the vehicle that knocked down the cyclist within this three foot clearance zone.
Well, that's the great thing about the United States, isn't it? We always have that right. To sue. So thank you, legislator, for joining us tonight and for this discussion. If there's anything else that you might want to request from the Traffic Safety Board, please reach out to me. This board has in the past endorsed or encouraged different types of action at the state level. What was our
Stop this yield.
Thank you.
We did pass similar to memorializing,
right?
Saying that we were in favor of stop as yield legislation.
The Idaho so stop.
Idaho
rule.
Stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so. Recently, we also passed a resolution in support of pedestrian bicycle use of the UND corridor. So that's something that. The full board would certainly be willing to consider anyway.
Very much appreciate that. And so, as I said, so this the resolution setting the public hearing is going to be considered on Thursday at the Housing and Transportation Committee meeting at 4 o'clock here in the legislative chamber. So if anybody, I believe the chairman, Chairman Collins, I believe, is amenable to taking public comment. So if anybody has any comments to make at that meeting, I recommend to anybody to come to it at 4 o'clock. And assuming that this resolution is passed, I'm hoping it will be. Again, it would be eligible for public comment actually to be speaking at the our June legislative meeting, since it's going to be on the agenda to set the public hearing for it. So people are more than welcome to come and speak at the June session, assuming that this resolution is on the agenda to set the public hearing. And then obviously if it's passed, we would have the public hearing at 7:05 before our July session. So there will be ample opportunity for public comment on this going forward. So, and then obviously we would be discussing it, passing the local law in August. So there will be, again, there's gonna be many opportunities for folks to be able to register their opinions on this. So, and I'd be happy if anybody, I have a few cards if, anybody would like me to leave with my contact information, I'd be happy to provide that to folks. So,
does anybody have any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Item two is resolution number 225 that was introduced by legislator Eric Stewart. I invited the legislator to attend to speak to these changes, but he is not here, so I think we can postpone this discussion. I will circulate what I have. I'm not sure exactly how his I'm not sure exactly how his recommended revisions to this policy change it specifically. He's recommending revisions to the existing 2009 pedestrian bicycle policy of Ulster County. I did inform him that we have formed a subcommittee of the Traffic Safety Board to look specifically at this issue. And I was concerned that we were maybe working at cross purposes, that here we have the legislator working on changes to the existing policy when, at the request of the county executive, the Traffic Safety Board was to form a subcommittee and do so. So I'm now actually, I think I understand where he's going here. I think these changes are relatively minor, but I don't know exactly, again, how his version amends the original version. And I think that our work will actually be a wider scope. I think we're going to look at a much wider breadth of focus areas rather than the specific language of the bike ped policy, and really explore things like Vision Zero and the safe systems approach. That's been my understanding, mm-hmm. but we won't know until the committee meets, and I apologize, that's on me. I expect it'll be a June, July, August activity when the subcommittee gets together.
Yeah, when I read this, it reminds me a little bit of the legislation we're trying to get through, the complete streets maintenance, which is, you know, you just basically have to look at every new project for a potential safety improvement. I think his goes a little bit further in that it says you actually have to build something. You actually have to add something. Is that true?
I think that's always been in the law. I couldn't compare them line for line, mm-hmm. the original law versus this revision. So I don't know exactly what he's changed. I just didn't have the time to go through them.
I'll tell you the biggest big pushback to the complete streets policy, and unfortunately it doesn't look like it's going to pass again, although we're really trying to get it through, is that, you know, DPWs don't like the idea that they may have to examine roadways that to them seem, you know, it seems like a waste of effort and resources to look at, for example, putting a sidewalk through a farmland. And to me, I think that that's kind of like, it's a little bit of a red herring kind of argument, if I'm using that right. It's a big distraction, because it's like, that's not really what Complete Streets policies are supposed to come from, people who want things to change specifically. So if there is no call for a sidewalk, you know, to go through your farm, if you will, that's never going to happen, right? It just wouldn't, yeah, that wouldn't be, you know. So I think that, you know, I of course, it's like just common sense stuff to me, which is like, if you're already doing the work, then why not just take a second look and see if you can't do something to add this to the safety of the project. And if you can't, or if there's no reason for it, just give us a reason, right? And then the next level of that would be for us to go ahead and get an actual budget line for complete streets money. So then the other argument that DPWs often say is, well, we don't have the money to do this. And they probably don't. Yeah. You know, I mean, we're not, so the next thing would be, well, we've got to get the money, you know, but you got to kind of get the policy first. This reminds me a lot of that, which is good policy. I just, you know, I think it's interesting, though, that you know, two legislators are kind of coming forward with policy that it's already kind of, we're pushing for in a statewide level. So
it does say on page two, the resolve, the pedestrian and bike policy shall be amended to include the following additional paragraph. No less than 30 days prior to the date on which the capital project pertaining to the Ulster County, what's PBP? Ulster County PBP. What's PBP stand for? A pedestrian bicycle policy.
Yeah.
Is submitted to the legislature for consideration. The Commissioner of Public Works is required. So this is a Brendan issue. is required to submit a written report to the Legislature's Public Works and Capital Projects Committee detailing considerations made in compliance. So it's basically justification mm-hmm. for the director, Commissioner of Public Works, to explain their design. I mean, and that gets to your comment. I remember going before Saugerties and encouraging them to pass a complete streets resolution. Mm-hmm. And the comments were So you mean every road in this town now has to have a sidewalk on it?
Yep.
Are you out of your mind? And like, as planners, we know, no, that's not what we're proposing. It's context-sensitive solutions.
Yeah.
You just want to make sure that people have safe, there's consideration so people have safe passage. That's my only concern, and it doesn't seem like it's being caused here, is that you create a standard now that our engineers have to do cookie cutter on every single span, create a bicycle or extended shoulder on maybe an extremely rural road. That doesn't seem to make financial sense or planning sense or engineering sense. But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that would be a really strict interpretation of this law. So.
Yeah, I think that was the only thing that I saw that was like, well, you know, if you're asking for a facility of some kind to be built on every single, you know, that's good. You're going to get pushback on that, right? Like, that's, so if you're just asking for some kind of explanation, I don't think that's unreasonable. But, you know, So
I responded to Legislator Stewart. He forwarded this to me and asked for our input. So I said I put it on the agenda. He's not responded since, so I'll speak with him eventually. Maybe we can get him to attend a meeting to provide his perspective. Because the other thing is, I don't know where this is coming from. Are his constituents asking for it? Is this something that he thought would be prudent? I know he's worked very extensively in Hurley on Zandhook Road and the concerns that residents have had persistently on the lack of a shoulder on Zandhook Road, and which DPW is addressing and in the process of addressing through a closed drainage system. Maybe it came from that. I don't know. So until we hear more from him, that's all I have there. We'll just keep it on the agenda for a little while.
It's interesting. There's a couple of bridges that the department has that I'm aware of, the Route 32 over the Walk Hill River. There is a sidewalk on that bridge, that there is really no
sidewalk to nowhere.
Yeah, but
I see it on 32 Walk Hill.
32 Walk Hill River, and also 4455 over the Walk Hill as well.
And yet the sidewalk's there, but the guardrail, the guide rail rather, prohibits
the access.
Somebody could walk over, but not if you're disabled.
Yeah, it really is a sidewalk kind of to nowhere. It was never designed, and those bridges they were built a long, long time ago. So you wonder with what forethought they were, because they didn't design the slopes to support the pedestrian movements. 213 over in Eddyville, over the Rondeau, they did make some accommodations for that one to allow some pedestrian access, but that was mainly for the fishing.
Right.
In that particular area. So just interesting anecdotal. Nick? Did you have something?
Yeah. Multiple repavings and R&Ps on Lucas Avenue since this policy was enacted have never resolved in any increased shoulder width, except for the portion where Professor Hales was killed.
Apparently. And that's the 55-mile-per-hour portion as well, right? So that would be west of High Falls? West of 213? Is that where that crash occurred?
Yeah, that's where the unmarked.
And that portion was built with federal aid, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That segment
I remember one of the deputy executives saying, well, we had a little money left over and we put some shoulders out. Of course, granted, it's primarily farmland, and it was easily accomplished, unlike other portions of Lucas, but still yet, the shoulders that I was told were budgeted somewhere around the year 2000 just never happened. That, of course, predates 2009, but since 2009, there's been multiple repavings and rehabs that never resulted other than that section.
Well, this potentially attempts to ameliorate that, address that issue.
Yeah, it needs some teeth.
Yeah, I know with the department, one last thing, when we resurface a road under the particular type of a project, maintenance resurfacing, we cannot widen shoulders under that because there hasn't been a design done. We can only put back what was there in the original design.
I don't know if the county The county may run into the same wall.
Could be. There could be some, some validity to that.
We don't have detailed surveys of of the right of way on a lot of our road. Unless it was an explicit project to survey them. Yeah. It's not like we have a map room that shows them.
Merchant Catone, I don't know if you've heard that name. He was with DPW prior to Adam. He was a while. But he used to, anytime somebody wanted to do a driveway or something, he would actually require them to get a land donation to give over some right of way as part of the access. He did a lot of piecing in four surveys to drive those. He got some of it, but never really got too far.
Do county roadways default to 12.5 feet from the center line? Is that the default, and then anything?
It's what's written in law, in state law. I forget. It's several rods.
If they're turnpikes, it depends on their actual definition.
Yeah.
So
some are user roads.
Correct. They're defined as user roads.
Rods are increments of 11 feet.
Yep.
Maybe.
Correct.
But I was told when some tree work was done in front of my house that it was 12.5 feet from the center line, which over the years could have moved as well.
So we'll jump back in line to member updates. Just run through that real quick. So, we spoke briefly, I think, last meeting, and you touched on the striping there with Route 28. Route 28 is going to be resurfaced from the roundabout to Hurley Mountain Road, and then the upper section from the Hickory Pit up to 375. Again, it's just a maintenance resurfacing. There should be inlaid striping to go along with that, and there may be, we have to look and see if it is candidate for the centerline rumble strips, even on the four lane. We'll look at the standard for that, if that's in that segment. We're still kind of hashing that out, but that will be done. As far as, state highways in Ulster County, we are losing ground on the maintenance of both the, paved travel lanes and the shoulders, which affect, all users. The inclement weather that we've been having has kind of given us one step forward, two steps back, but, we're out patching every day that we can possibly be patching. There are some segments of road that are notoriously problematic. 209 in Hurley under the bridge, Peace and Stone Ridge, 32 going up the hill past the park, some segments of 28 out past Route 42 going to the Big Indian, and some segments of Albany Avenue by Foxhall. And a few other stretches, like little pieces, just the worst of the worst. I did submit for a wear and wear job order contract to see if we can get a deep mill and fill in those segments, just because we just can't get anything to stay in there. So one of those four has been approved. The 209 segment has been approved, so that one definitely will be getting done, those two pieces. They're small segments, but they're something. They're the worst of the worst that we're just keep kind of chasing our tents. So the only other thing I have, and I know it did make the Albany news, vulnerable road users, bicyclists, pedestrians, but highway maintenance workers are also, boots on the ground. And we did have a DOT employee that was struck and killed last week in a work zone while in the process of picking the work zone up. We still don't have quite all the details, but he was a highway maintenance supervisor. He was 54 years old. He was the local fire chief. In the process of loading the cones in the back of the pickup truck, traffic was going on, and for whatever reason, driver, entered into the work zone and struck him in the back of the truck. So, awareness in every aspect, it's there's just distractions. We're out there on the roads, and there's a calculated risk. I don't know. We increase our standards so much to protect our drivers out there, yet it's, there's really nothing that, that we can do other than get funding to keep the roads in as good a condition possible so we don't have to be out there as frequently as we do.
It happens way too much.
Yeah.
Way too much.
Yeah, there's more and more exposure out there every day for everything we do. And, when everything's set up, we're pretty good, but in the process of putting all signs and cones out, we're hanging out there pretty bad. But we do seek, state police and even local police enforcement to help us, get out and set it up whenever possible. But this was on, I think it was on Route 7 up by Lusick Falls, not a steady road, but it wasn't interstate, it's not a 209 or 587 type of road. Not something that would standard be use for police enforcement.
That's what we had always begged to see every time I was working on a road, working with the bridge crew or the guide rail crew or anything like that. On higher traffic roads, I mean, the back roads weren't a big deal. But when you're on a higher traffic road, I mean, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about the man standing on the side of the road. And I've had my crew hit before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
you get a shovel knocked out of your hand and nobody thinks twice about it.
Yeah. Constantly happening. So, just additional awareness. You know, at some point, I don't know, it's another timing thing, works on awareness for public safety and everything. Something to consider kicking around when Eric does mm-hmm. the next announcement or something. Because, we're in the season.
And yeah.
They're complaining when we're out there and when we're not at the same time. Yeah. So it is unfortunately thankless, as many of our public service jobs are at the end of the day. So that's all I have for member updates.
Maybe it's time for a reminder that the move over law applies to all highway workers, as it applies to police, and it, rightly it should, but it applies to all highway workers also.
Yeah.
And I think we really should remind people
is
strongly
that in
of that.
Draft law? Is that?
No, that is the law.
Yeah, that is the law. They changed, they updated it.
Yeah, they incorporated that to yellow amber lights as well.
Okay. Yeah. So just a reminder, because there's that tragedy, and of course we had, and he was not killed, but we had the person who was hit, who was guiding traffic, who I saw killed. And then, just last week I came on a crash and I saw there weren't, DPW, but there were the first responders running across four lanes of moving traffic, and it's terrifying. I think the public really does need a very strong reminder that they got it. Like, these guys are working. You gotta respect it. So.
Dave, I survived the era of orange shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did.
That's where we came on board.
Yep.
Rose?
Okay. So, that's me. So member updates, I was in, as I mentioned, I was in Albany on the 13th, and we were lobbying for the Safe Streets package, which includes the 3-foot passing law, and it includes stop to yield, which we've discussed here. It also includes the complete streets maintenance law, and it also has the super speeders law in it, which is really, really getting close to coming to the finish line. So the Super Speeders Act is the one that, if you rack up 10 points or six, camera tickets, speeding tickets in a year, so you're pretty bad, you get a speed limiter put in your car, like any car that's registered to you automatically. And that speed limiter will keep you from going over 5 miles over the speed limit. And it's also been demonstrated where these things are used. It has a long-term effect on the behavior. So I think that it's a really, not only is it it's a soft punitive, right? Because you're not taking away a license and someone can still go to work. You know, they just can't, speed.
Just can't sleep in anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, we know that it's really like 5 to 10% of the drivers that are really causing most of the problems. And this really targets those types of offenders. And right on the heel of losing the woman in Brooklyn and two of her children, and the little boy is still in the hospital all at once, it was the worst kind of incentive. But Senator Hinchey did sign on to co-support it. Assemblyperson Sharista was already there with it. So we have full support from our legislators for this. So really hoping that it passes. It's passed the Assembly. I think it's the other way around. It still has to pass the Senate. And tomorrow night, I'm at the Denison Theater in New Paltz will be showing The Speed of Silence, which is the documentary that we've made. So that's going to be at 6 o'clock tomorrow. It's open. We're requesting a $10 ticket fee, but you absolutely do not have to pay it. And we're going to have like a small panel of impacted people. So that's going to be happening. And then I'm sorry, his name escapes me, but the officer from Ulster had requested some lights and vests, so I brought them in. I actually contacted Joe O'Connor's office because this represents just about the end of the lights. He gave me 50, and he's going to get us another case. So if there's anybody who is working with people or, you know, has an occasion to see people who are, and these are good quality lights. These are, you know, if you were to go into my bike shop and try and buy these would be like
Night Riders are great.
Yeah, these would be like $50 light set. Yeah. So that's continuing. We're doing that through Safe Pass. I think that's about it. I brought some propaganda from the New York State Bicycle Coalition, but it was very relevant to our discussion. I think it's just a reminder that actually in New York State, a cyclist can use the mm-hmm. full lane unless it's an interstate or unless there is a sign that says you can. One last very interesting thing that just kind of came up for me by chance. I was invited to Newburgh to talk to the stakeholders down there who are trying to start a bike share program through NYSERDA. And I found out that this is the same group of people who are working with Kingston right now to try to get their bike share program going. So we had a really great conversation. We were able to really talk about the first proposal kind of fell flat. There was a lot of things that the activists had some concerns about. So we're really, really hoping that, a bike share program does come to Ulster County. And, so it was really great talking to them. They did say, though, we were under the impression that, a bike share probably would be the guarantee of this grant. They said it's not. They said it could definitely be something else, too.
Right.
It's not necessarily a bike share. So,
Kingston and SUNY New Paltz are both recipients of that NYSERDA grant. And they're both working along similar process.
Awesome. That's it.
No news from DPW.
So Eric and I went to the Kingston Central School, not Kingston, Highland Central School District board meeting, and we presented the school bus driver of the year to the board. He did an awesome presentation. At the end, we had a standing ovation. The awardee, Mary Duca, showed the plaques that she received. It was a very nice ceremony and definitely, good to be out there letting the school boards know that this is an award that they can be entitled to. So I was happy with the outcome.
Thank you
and
so much.
Yeah.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool.
Awesome.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Ulster County Transportation Council, as I've said, has been in the process of updating the Transportation Improvement Program, which is the 5-year capital program of all federal aid to be used in Ulster County for FHWA and FTA projects over the course of a 5-year period. So it includes DOT projects, locally sponsored projects, including Ulster County DPW, bridges, highway, trail projects, and UCAT. So just a few updates. We will be having a public meeting right here on June 10th, which is a Wednesday night at 6 p.m. And that meeting will also be broadcast on Zoom. We'll be sending out the public notification for that on Wednesday. So no one's been notified yet. Except for a few people. The draft TIP has been approved by our technical committee and then goes to 15-day public comment, which is part of the presentation purpose. And then it goes to the policy board for final review and approval. Then it gets sent to the state and is rolled up into the statewide transportation improvement program. That's the process. Some notable projects to make you aware of. We're providing a small, what's called a fair share formula in federal aid that we can use on the local system. We receive $5 million in flex spending, STBG, which can be spent on any surface transportation project for the most part. Unfortunately, we were not able to program that money toward any new projects because existing projects required additional federal aid in order to continue to move them through the design process. Those projects included Ulster County Department of Public Works, our Route 299 shoulder project. The construction cost is estimated over $10 million for that project. It's a big project with a lot of pieces in it. I don't know the mileage, but it covers quite a distance in Gardner and New Paltz. Tilson Avenue required, they went well over their budget for the realignment project. They required $1.6 million in additional funding. There are other projects that required additional funding. So we'll continue to try to move projects forward. Our policy from now on, I think, is going to be get to design approval and then talk to us about additional money for cap for construction, because there are just too many projects that are not making it to construction in a reasonable period of time. New York State DOT Region 8 has proposed several new projects, one of which is $15 million for Washington Avenue in the city of Kingston between Sawkill Avenue and Schwenk Drive. We do not know the details of this scope of work yet. The design doesn't begin until 2027. We expect at least some of it is because of the work that the planning department has put forward in terms of the TAP application with encouragement from Rosemary and many other members of our community to make the crossing safer at what is currently the Catskill Mountain Railroad crossing at the UND, where it is the terminus of the Kingston-Hurley Rail Trail. But there will also be $15 million in NHPP funding. It's a significant investment in that road, so there'll be other design changes, I'm sure, particularly at the intersection. I could only guess what they might be thinking, but the a roundabout does come to mind for motorized vehicle at Sawkill Avenue, but that has been discussed in the past. We'll see. The important thing is that the public is aware and involved in the design process, and I'm sure we will be. There is also a $7 million investment using Highway Safety Improvement Program funding in the town of Shongum at the intersection of 208, the triangle, as you go south to head into Orange County. So that will be redesigned as well. I would almost guarantee that will probably be the preferred design will be a roundabout at that location. Off the top of my head, new projects, those were the two really big ones. Of course, the Route 28 bridge reconstruction project in Woodstock is well-funded at nearly $30 million, and the description has been changed to include pedestrian improvements, which this was previously just a bridge project.
Where is this exactly?
There are several bridges on Tinker Street.
Yeah.
Dave, well, you're more aware, I think, know a little bit more.
Yeah, I believe it's five bridges, right?
Yeah.
Five bridges from Tinker Street, basically from the green going out past the post office. And did they get the sidewalk extended down to the new library?
I've only heard, I no guarantees, yeah. But that was the big ask of the town, and the Complete Streets Advisory Committee was very outspoken, trying to get a safe pedestrian connection and improve the network. I mean, there's not a lot of right of way there.
Yeah, and I think that's the struggle now is there's a big checklist of things that they would like in there and a very limited amount of space to do it. So I don't know that they've prioritized everything yet. But,
yeah, I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah, I think the design considerations is they have revised it and extended the completion date based on kind of the new scope.
So, right.
Yeah, but there's a lot of community involvement. I think the community needs to kind of get organized a little bit to figure out what their actual priorities are.
Yeah, that's a tough one because, well, there's a lot of constituents and stakeholders who want to see improved pedestrian connections. There are business owners who don't want to give up a single parking space.
Yeah.
That's a difficult discussion that I would not want to wade into personally. It's a difficult one. Those are three big DOT projects. I feel like there's a fourth that I just can't think of, but it's not a major pedestrian or safety initiative, I don't think. So want to make everyone aware that meeting will be again here Wednesday night. If you can't attend, it'll be on Zoom and it will be recorded. We're also finally we're resubmitting our Safe Streets for All planning grant application to the FHWA. That'll be the proposal is to do a countywide systemic crash analysis and update to our 2019 plan. That deadline is approaching in about 2 weeks. The application is strong as ever. So we'll see what happens. If that's not successful, we're just going to give up on the Safe Streets for All grant and do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because we've waited around. It's been too long. This is a really important component of understanding where crashes are occurring at an inordinate rate and promulgating some, you know, it's an excellent tool to help us guide the limited resources that we have to fix these problems to the worst problems that there are. It's a very useful planning document in that regard. So we want to get that update done as soon as we can. And otherwise, our new planner, senior transportation planner, is working out well. Chris Seeger, he hasn't run off yet. So it's little by little learning more and taking a little more off my plate. So we're happy to have him. Thank you.
Yeah, Kingston, everything so far, we're doing what we can. Our traffic safety unit's now split amongst two shifts, 8 to 4 and a 4 to 12, effectively doubling the number of violations that they're writing. So far to date, since middle of January to the end of May, 2,500 stops, 2,200 tickets, about 335 speeders have been ticketed, and 45 aggravated unlicensed operators. So we're out there. The message isn't getting through, I guess.
Well, isn't it?
Yeah. Tinti's quote is, I still can't believe you would think people would start learning, right?
But yeah.
How did those numbers compare to last year's?
Well, we didn't have dedicated enforcement officers.
Oh.
So our ability to actually just focus on traffic, that these two officers don't respond to calls. So they start at 8 in the morning, and usually by the time they get up to Keith Kincaid, you've already got two cars pulled over. So it just amazes me that they handled 76 crashes amongst the two shifts right now, which is not all of them. Obviously, they don't work weekends. They don't have the midnight shift. So, but you know, they give a fair amount of warnings. But you know, we try the education. Engineering is outside of the realm, anything we involved in. So now it's just enforcement. So,
Are there any particular locations where speed enforcement seems to be needed or you're focusing on?
Yeah, so we normally operate off of complaints, but I was mentioning the day before. We have two speed signs that we just purchased, similar to what the county bought for their Safe Streets program. So they have the capability to see it on their phones. Place them, they lock them onto the signs, whatever the T-posts.
You're going by Stony Run now, right?
Yeah. And they can then monitor essentially real time to determine that. We're also looking into a service that'll provide us relatively up-to-date data, usually daily, and tell us where we're having violators occur. But normally Lucas Avenue, complaints come in from there. There's East Chester Street, they're good. Anytime they set up, they're writing 15 speed tickets there. So, and it's not—they're not writing 26 or 27 in a 25 mile an hour zone.
Right.
You know, they're writing, you know, 35, 36. You know. So, but message isn't getting through. They're doing the same thing. You know, they try to do it in education, but the same thing. I see cyclists on the sidewalks or people not crossing at the crosswalks. They're trying to educate them as well because it's. It's all of it, you know. There's a lot of moving parts in Kingston. And think about how much traffic. I don't even know what the traffic count would be, honestly. How many cars operate at one point in a 24-hour period in Kingston.
Citywide, it's huge.
Yeah, so it's too many. There's too many, you know. Even with just those two officers, one on the day shift, one on 4-12s, and then having the additional five or six officers working the street, it's...
Not enough.
It's never enough, you know, it's never enough. So, but they get it from me that, you know, we're usually weekly, I reinforce, write the ticket, enough's enough. Issue the summons. Be procedurally just about it, but issue the summons.
Look out.
Yep. And that's why I can't
believe...
It's
the sign says, strictly enforced.
And I just don't understand it, you know, just in 1 week, 200.
There are, you know, I noticed, it did change, I think, the MUTCD law, but you used to, when a speed zone was changing, you used to, it was customary to have the larger sign up first as you came into, you know, as you were stepping down. I do notice on certain sections of road, it is very indescript. You know, they change the sign, but there's not a reflective post strip. It's not oversized. It doesn't, you know, I think there could potentially be some opportunity to provide a little more notice with those first signs, and it would be a conversation really to have with DPW.
Right.
To alert them. I mean, the sign on Hurley Avenue is still a very small sign and an old rusted post that, you know, other than the other one, I think was silver because all the white had faded
right,
off.
Yeah.
And it's even downsized. So, you know, I know we make efforts with stop signs and other traffic control devices to, you know, accentuate them with some of the different additional reflectivity or oversize them. You know, the idea is not to give them the ticket. The idea is to get the compliance.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to Ed Norman about it, but it may be, you know, it's food for thought. It could definitely, it couldn't hurt, or the engineering department.
Right.
You know,
yeah, so. John Schulte.
Yeah, yeah. I think there definitely is some opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, this is,
you know,
a volunteer.
25 ahead, you know, right. the breakdown coming in. You know,
yeah,
that works a lot.
We don't want to write the tickets.
Exactly.
Honestly, it's not that. We just want to comply with the laws.
The notice is very subtle as you enter. And I'm, you know, looking specifically from the state highway system as you transition.
Yeah, one of the things they noticed right away was when we first put them out in January, with the speed reduction, that even the phones, Google Maps, whatever, was still showing 30.
Correct.
So contact had to be made to the mayor's office to have that reduced.
Has that changed? Has anyone noticed if that's changed yet? Oh, that's amazing.
I don't think it comes up on the car we have at the Toyota work. I don't think that's been updated.
Oh, really?
It doesn't show anything. As soon as you get outside, it does show up.
Okay.
When the city changed the direction for Burhans, which is right next to my house, it's one way now. A lot of map systems don't show it as one way. We went. I sent the local law to Google, and along with other pieces of evidence, and I'm not sure if they've ever updated. I still have visitors. I'm so sorry, I went the wrong way. But that's great that they've updated it for something as important as the 25 rule.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you.
And in Rosendale, so I've been in touch with the police chief requesting that he contact the New York State Police regarding increased enforcement of weighing vehicles that are rumbling through our town, trucks in particular that are rumbling through our town. So I'm kind of waiting back to hear from the outcome of that request. I've also emailed and been in touch with the town supervisor regarding whether, you know, explaining what the Complete Streets program would entail for our town. And hopefully we're going to get it on the agenda for one of the next town board meetings or go into executive session or something so that we can figure out whether or not it's worth our effort to become a Complete Streets town. It's a matter of educating people on what it is. So that's a bit of a work in progress. I don't expect anything to happen anytime soon, but I'm definitely I'm nagging them on it, so they're getting used to it. And it can, and you know, on the nagging part is that, you know, kind of gearing up for this the public meeting, I mean for the traffic study, which is going to come out this summer, right, Brian?
Yeah, I had a quick up.
Okay.
It's done.
It is.
I'm told the New Paltz and the Rosendale studies are done. They're just going through the final internal QAQC before they're submitted to the municipalities, and I ask that the MPO be included on any follow-up discussion. So they should be forthcoming anytime.
Great, Q. And is it typical to have a public hearing on those studies when they come out? No.
Mm-hmm. No.
Is it up to the town to do that, or is it not advised?
It's.
Everybody's interested.
I mean,
everybody.
You can certainly put it on your town board agenda
and
make it a topic of discussion that way. And
mm-hmm.
I think then members of the public can then see it for themselves.
I see.
It's not simply something that. The DOT doesn't post it anywhere.
No, I mean, I would assume the town could post it on their website.
Okay.
It's a foilable document.
Right.
For
okay.
sure.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be presented to the town.
I'm not sure. You got to see very much. I don't know. I don't review these very often, but it'll be really interesting to see what kind of analysis has
okay.
been done sure. and what conclusions are drawn.
Okay.
Great. So we'll be there, right there with you.
Okay.
Reviewing.
Yeah, I just because it's on my mind, Rosendale, I was I had an occasion to stop over by where Victoria Cooper was hit. And, you know, I've gone through that intersection many times with a car, many times on a bike. But what I never realized before is when you're crossing 32 and you get a light that says you can cross as a pedestrian, Main Street coming out of Rosendale is getting green light saying they can go. And I was shocked. I was crossing, I was going to go check out the memorial, and cars started coming at me. And I was like, well, what, I've got the light. And what I realized is that coming off Main Street, they've got a green light. And
is
I'm
there,
like...
Is there a pedestrian crosswalk?
No, but it is an intersection where pedestrians cross. It's a perfectly legal place. To cross.
Yeah, no, it's just not for it. So there's not a crosswalk and
there's no crosswalk. There's no crosswalk. There's certainly no pedheads.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly how once one goes green, the other one goes red back and forth. That's how it's designed.
Yeah.
It was that intersection was designed to move traffic. It wasn't designed.
But this is what I'm saying it is kind of alarming when you get yourself out of a car and you attempt to you kind of reconstruct for yourself, like maybe what might have happened. And it's like, wow, there is oncoming traffic coming. Even though I've got a red light, there is oncoming traffic coming right at me.
Yeah. That happens at a lot of intersections,
yeah.
even when
the crosswalk
is present, and even when they have the ability to cross, you
mm-hmm.
know, there are still movements that, you know, that is, the driver has to stop for the pedestrian at the crosswalk.
It's like the Neshwank Drive in Washington Avenue.
Yeah.
Unless you hit the button.
Yeah. Adams Ferry Farms.
That'll stop that if you hit the button.
At Schwenk in Washington, if you want to cross, you have to call it.
Okay.
And you will get a pedestrian. The movement is still the turning vehicles.
The turning vehicles have
will
to go.
Still
yes.
right. They still
have a green light.
Yeah.
But the pedestrian will have a safe to walk sign.
Yep.
Now in Kingston, they've worked steadily, particularly on Broadway, to update all their signals to provide a leading pedestrian interval, so that all legs are red while the pedestrian is given the right of way. But not all signals are capable of providing that.
That technology
isn't all there. All the new ones are,
right.
but the older ones are.
Well, in any case, I would really hope that DOT pays very close attention to that, because that to me was just so alarming. I was like, wow, there's traffic coming right at me.
It's considered, you know, in our town board resolutions, we did call attention to that. Whether or not, and that we did ask them to consider those resolutions when they were doing the study. Whether they did or not, I guess we'll find out.
It was funny. One guy kind of yelled out to me, "Well, they have a green light," and I thought to myself, "But here's the thing: I'm from out of town, just as Victoria was. How would I know that that's happening unless this is a lived experience for me? You don't.
The rail." As you're coming from, you're heading north on 32, and you're going making the left into Main Street there. Unless you're a local, you won't know that you have the right of way to go onto Main Street.
Yeah.
So that all the time. That
that's
more vehicle to vehicle crash, but still.
Yeah.
Rosendale has had a difficult history with state DOT.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Brian, just one last thing about those speed signs. You said you mentioned that many of them are not operable.
So last year, Ulster County Executive Metzger directed Commissioner Masterson to purchase a number of those signs,
mm-hmm.
the speed feedback devices. They were distributed to municipalities. Those are on permanent loan.
Okay.
I was under the impression they would come back to DPW for future distribution. So they are no longer under the county's control.
Oh.
I dialed up the dashboard the other day. There's only one that's operating right now.
That's what you said, yeah.
Out of how many?
I don't remember how many, but 15.
Wow.
At least, yeah. Mm-hmm. I only saw one that was operating.
Jesus.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know what mechanism we have at this point. If they were distributed for permanent loan, essentially gifts, it's up to the municipality to use it.
Okay. Yeah, I mentioned that to the chief. I haven't heard back from him. I think he's out of town. But I wonder if ours are working.
Mm.
Some of ours weren't actually working. I mean, they were posted, but they weren't working because they didn't get the angle right. You have to get
right.
The angle right.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that if not, you don't see the flashing until you actually pass through the sign. So
gotcha.
And that's not everywhere, just in some places. I'll follow up. Thank you so much.
Old business, Brian?
All right. So the bike pad policy, I will send out notice in June to get that subcommittee running. Education outreach activities, I don't have anything under education and outreach activities. Reappointments, letters have gone out from the county executive. So Rosemary, did you receive yours?
Not yet.
Your reappointment letter? Maybe it's sitting. They were written and signed.
Okay.
So Lou and Rose have been reappointed. Former supervisor Batez from Woodstock has been appointed, as well as Nick has been appointed. So those, did you receive your letter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got the letter. But
maybe there. I just came home from work. I didn't really check my mail. So
all right.
Sitting there. Yeah.
So then it has, the final step is approval by the Ulster County Legislature. I imagine that'll happen in June, I would guess. And then it'll be official. And I just mentioned, I sent a request to Nickel at Region 8, our deputy director, and he said the studies in New Paltz and Rosendale are complete, and they will be, the municipalities will be notified shortly regarding those. And I asked him that if a meeting is held, that the county planning department and MPO be included in those meetings. And finally, that brings us to the Traffic Safety Board Reserve Fund of $3,598. Rosemary had some ideas on use of this fund. Since we don't have a full board, we can't vote. We were not going to make a final decision.
I didn't think we
tonight.
Were going to vote on it tonight anyway. I just thought we would just talk about it.
Right.
So
please, by all means.
So if everyone wants to take one. So as I mentioned last time, I was thinking that a way to use this money, which actually also would go very neatly into the education part, which we always kind of miss, would be to use some of these funds to create either kits, or I don't know if like a micro grant is possible, but so the idea would be that I could just go ahead and the Ulster County Traffic Safety Board could create and support DYI Quick Start Community Traffic Safety Project Kit, or offer mini grants to support grassroots traffic safety and accessibility improvements. These initiatives would be inspired by tactical urbanism principles and will empower local residents and organizations to test low-cost, short-term interventions that address real community-identified street safety issues. By supporting community-driven municipalities, approved pilot projects ranging from pop-up bike lanes to crosswalks and temporary curb extensions and pedestrian plazas, Ulster County can build momentum for long-term safety improvements while building trust and civic engagement. And we don't have to spend a lot more time on that, but I think you guys get the idea. It's basically we would be offering these, packages of equipment or money to a couple of different pilot projects to see basically what they can do. So the projects themselves would have to, so there would have to be step-by-step. So what we would offer is step-by-step guidance for identifying safety issues and a template for planning and proposing, right? Tips for engaging and instructions on gathering materials and stuff. And also simple evaluation forms, right? Because what I'm really thinking with stuff like this is it's really kind of a precursor almost to like a demonstration style project, right? So there should be like a very clear like process of this is why we picked this and this is, you know, what we hope to fix with this, right? So, you know, that if people who, well, municipalities, and, you know, this is, would all be, none of this is, so urban, tactical urbanism gets like, you know, kind of a rap because, oh, a lot of these are guerrilla projects and things like that, but this would not be like that. These would be sanctioned by municipalities, and they would be the types of projects that, like, you know, community centers could pull together, or schools could pull together, or, you know, those would be the kind. And so the types of, you know, the type, I think I went through like the list of the projects who could benefit, you know, community groups, school and youth organizations, and elder and accessible living advocates. And the key requirements, as I said, address a specific traffic safety or accessibility challenge that's been identified within your town. Have a demonstrated community desire or need. So this isn't like your little personal, wow, I wish that I could turn this parking lot into a garden, right? This is something that is community driven, and somehow you'd have to demonstrate that. It's got to be executable between one or three days. In other words, we don't want you to say that you're going to do this project. You know, this really has to have a rollout, right? We want to see that you're going to do it and execute it. Got to have prior municipal approval, or if you're going to be using a county a property owner's property, they've got to approve it. And it's got to be something that. So the idea of these projects are not like that they're going to fix the entire situation. The idea of a demonstration project is that you're demonstrating, literally, that here is an issue. We think that we could quickly come up with some creative ideas to at least mitigate this issue. And then you're going to demonstrate whether or not you think that worked. Right, so you're going to turn in an evaluation form, and you're going to say, we think that if we made a parklet in this area, that more kids would stay after school and safely cross here, or whatever. And then you're going to have some way of demonstrating that that maybe happened, or that it didn't happen, right? These types of projects, like, for example, when we're thinking of things like daylighting, does everyone know what daylighting an intersection is? I know you know.
Sounds self-explanatory.
So well, it basically means that you're going to keep cars from parking so close, you know, to a corner, because it's been demonstrated that blocked corners cause traffic safety issues, right, for everybody, for drivers and for pedestrians, right? The state law actually already pretty much says that you can't park that close to a corner. It's very hard to enforce, right? And police and parking people don't want to get involved with enforcing it. Understandable. Kingston, if you drive around Kingston and you look at some of our projects, right? So some people will be like, well, they just put some paint on the corner there. We don't understand why they did that. Like, there's no reason for it. Well, there actually really is a reason for it.
Daylighting, right.
Yeah, you're daylighting that intersection. You're marking it off, and in the hope is going to be the next time around, there's going to be something more permanent put in there once you've demonstrated that this is a good way to do this, right? So in Hoboken, for example, they start with the paint, then they move on to permanent planters or to bike corrals or to, you know, community gardens or something like that. But they don't start with the big project. They start with the small demonstration. So I thought that, you know, we don't have a lot of money, but I think for like between $500 and $1,000, you could probably give, you know, a couple of communities an opportunity to do this. I also thought, so like I'm thinking, so there's a project going on in Kingston right now. It's really adorable. They're putting a parklet in over by the George Washington School. Parklet is you've created a park out of a corner or some space, right? And the school has sanctioned it, and they're going ahead, and they're using things like pallets, and they've done a little bit of fundraising. So they put some money into it, right? So I think that we should allow people to be able to do that, but with a cap, $2,000 total, because we want these to be reproducible, easily reproducible, right? So we don't want you to, you know, even if you do have the resources, we don't want you to go out and spend $5,000 on your project, because that kind of defeats the purpose. So that's my idea, and I just thought that we could think, there's a lot to be hashed out with it. I get it. This is very, very, like, just kind of putting it out there to see what people would think and what the structure might be. There's a lot of questions that I can't answer. I don't know what the county can and would pay for example. I don't know if it would be something where we would have to buy the cones or we could give people money. I don't know how that would work. So those are all questions I really don't have answers to. So that's it. That's my idea.
So this could be used in conjunction with privately raised funds?
A small amount. So up to $2,000. The whole project should not cost more than $2,000. So if we're giving $500 or, you know, whatever in materials, then we don't want you to, we want you to keep that cap still at $2,000. So you could raise another $1,000 or $1,500, but not $5,000. Because then now you're making it prohibitive for somebody else who wants to try it.
They could have done it with their own money in the first place.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, schools would be a natural place to try something like this out. Bike gardens are a great example of things like this, right? And I'm just trying to there's so many kind of temporary bike lanes. Do you know what it costs to make a temporary bike lane? Not much, because really all you need are traffic cones. Seriously, that's all you need are traffic cones, and the municipality to sanction it for a week or so. That's what you need.
So the planner in me thinks this is a wonderful idea.
Cool.
The coordinator of the Traffic Safety Board, this frightens me. That's coordinators. I think this would involve a significant commitment of staff time in mm-hmm. order for it to be successful. And that's something that the sport does not have.
Mm-hmm.
It has me to help with agendas and meeting minutes and some other. I mean, just to give you an example, the school bus driver of the year was, it didn't break me. I don't want to over-exaggerate. But it really tested the limits of the amount of time I had to devote to something. And that's not a huge lift. And John does a great amount of that work and offers assistance. This looks like it requires a lot of administrative capacity that I'm not so sure we have. I have other questions as well, but I don't want to pour too much cold water on it at this point, because I know it's a proposal under consideration, and as you already said, being floated for further development. I would say that we have three pretty active complete streets committees right now, and I'd be interested to see or learn if they would be interested in pursuing something like this and what the barriers mm-hmm. to them pursuing it. Having been part of those discussions at Kingston, I think they're really at a loss of even where to begin, let alone selecting potential locations and how do you select countermeasures, et cetera, the design elements. There's a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
not the least of which is getting a permit, I think, in some instances, to do the work. And I'm not so sure we would have, I don't want to be the go-to resource, and suddenly, I want any of us necessarily
mm-hmm.
to be put on the spot as suddenly the resource for doing tactical urbanism in Ulster County. I'm not so sure the amount of money we have is sufficient as mm-hmm. well. I have other thoughts as well, but I'm going to stop now because I don't want to be throwing too much cold water on what I think is a really good proposal. I'd be interested if the Governor's Traffic Safety Committee might be amenable to accepting a proposal like this, if their grant program is mm-hmm. would even consider something like this, because I could see this it just so happened when I printed this out, and then I'll shut up, there was already a printout on the printer of a grant project from the New York State Department of State that sounded really similar in a lot of components of this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you would be asking for a grant amount to pull this off in a county between $50,000 to $100,000, so that you have sufficient staff time to develop all the rules, to do the outreach, to solicit the input, to manage the applications, the list goes on. There's a lot involved in managing a project of this scale. So I would be concerned that, I'm not sure that this amount of money that we found, the $3,500, would be sufficient. But I don't want this proposal to die necessarily, because I think it's a strong proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my thought was exactly yours about going to the Complete Streets advisories first to see what kind of buy-in and what kind of interest there might be for something like this. I did talking to people in the Kingston Complete Streets Advisory. You know, it is funny, you know, the issue almost always with these kinds of projects is that there's just the information isn't out there. So this parklet project that's going on over by George Washington, they could have gone to the Complete Streets Advisory and asked for them, because that they do have the funding to maybe help them with something like that, but they didn't know it existed, right? So I think that it would be like one of the biggest obstacles to something like this would really be getting it out there and getting people to understand, you know. And it does take a lot of education. There's no question. It takes, you know, people need to understand what. But that being said, places are doing these all over. You know, these are really popular, and there are, you know, like, so to your point to, like, all of the complications, and I'm not saying that those aren't true, but one of the ideas of this is to try to take those complications, like, limit them, right? So I would be interested in seeing, like, everything you said, what could we do to possibly scale that back and make it easier? Because the whole idea is to take out a lot of that really cumbersome stuff that people want to do when they want to do things like that. How do we streamline it? And maybe that's more than creating the kit, it's creating the resource to be like, if you do want to do this project, this is what you have to do, and these are the, you know, the permits you might, and this is another way to go about it, is to go directly to the politicians in charge and say, look, you guys can help make this happen if you want something like this to happen.
I mean, I read this, and this is a discrete project that would take, I think, a lot of effort. I mean, the kit under step one in and of itself is a pretty big endeavor.
Yeah.
And I know you said excellent resources that already exist that you can just mm-hmm. mimic. And, you know, that's the highest form of flattery. We do it all the time in planning. When there's something mm-hmm. that works, just copy it. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if there were the chair of the Kingston Complete Streets Advisory Committee were to come to this board to say, listen, we'd really like to do tactical urbanism, but we don't have the money, and we would really like your support, that would be a different conversation,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, here's our proposal, we would really like to look at these intersections because they have a high rate of crashes, and we know that a neck down or something like that could really have a beneficial impact, but we need the money to do the chalk or something, like, I would be all ears.
Okay.
But coming at it from this direction and trying to encourage the horses to drink, I think is going to be really challenging, really burdensome for a committee of this type. Those are my concerns.
Okay. Fair enough.
But again, I don't want to kill the conversation at this mm-hmm. point, so it's still a valid proposal as far as I'm concerned.
Well, maybe I'll take your advice and I'll go and talk to Paul and talk to a few other people and be like,
Paul and Ella.
Brian mm-hmm. says you should not.
Yep.
But just as I said, I'm just putting it out there in terms of, like, some kind of creative ways that I would like to see us engaging the community mm-hmm. more. I think that's really, like, people don't even know that we exist, and I think this is a really important resource for a community. Just knowing that this exists, like, so maybe a use of the money is just sending some of us on the road too, and just to tell people that we exist and what we're doing, and you can come to us. I don't know, but anything that kind of brings in more community, I think, is something that we should really be outside of the PSA. All due respect.
I agree. Well, the PSA has been ineffective in doing that. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. In the few that we've done, you put a press release out. You even do some videos with the sheriff and the county executive, for crying out loud, and it barely measures on the radar.
Yeah. You know?
However, I mean, what I was thinking, and again, we don't even have a quorum tonight, so we're going to have to postpone the discussion, is creating a package that could be distributed to citizens and providing each municipality with a package that would be a safety package, like a vest, a light, a pamphlet with our name on it that tells what the traffic safety board is, and could come in a bag. We could even purchase totes that have reflective material on them that say Ulster County Traffic Safety Board. That might be feasible. I haven't tried to budget any of it out, though.
Yeah.
So.
That's it. That's.
Thank you for putting the time into the proposal. And I would like to see something like this. Again, I would love to see something like this mm-hmm. active in Kingston and Ulster County. But I just don't think that this funding source is the right funding source, is the right fit.
It's not tons of money to begin with, but I would like to see us do some more outreach and things like that to really engage people.
I'm also going to reach out as a follow-up to my counterparts in Dutchess and Orange County, MPOs, Emily Dozier, I think you know, and others. I know they've done some tactical urbanism, part of larger corridor management plans. I'd be interested to see if they've considered any of this type of work on their own.
Okay.
See what I hear. Report back. Are there any other thoughts on the use of funding in general?
I mean, I do agree with, you know, your proposal. I mean, we're just, I think at this point in time, there's a little bit of a time frame. It's time sensitive to spend the money in some form. So we're looking for a low-hanging piece of fruit.
Right.
And, you know, with this, we are the Traffic Safety Board. And if there is, you know, something that we can get out to brand us and to, you know, physically items and goods to provide, you know, people out there on the roads to make them more visible. I think there's a lot of value in that as just a low-hanging piece of fruit to get off the vine and get this money spent and, you know, maybe trigger in some way, you know, try to find additional funding.
The vests have proven to be popular.
Mm.
And I don't know if they've slowed down for you, Rose.
No, I mean, people are still, people are asking for, I mean, I could give people more. I like kind of divvy them out, but.
We ran out of them in a day.
Yeah. Yeah, the vests are popular. The bikes, the lights are extremely popular. You know, we go out and do our community rides, and we're just, you know, we're helping people with them all the time. So I think so if we did something like that, if we did, like, lights or vests or things, I mean, you know, giving people, like, also opportunities to, like, hey, this is where the meeting is, and if you have a traffic safety issue, you're welcome to come. And talk to us. You know, I think giving, you know, just letting people know, like, there is a public comment section. Like, mm-hmm. this is an opportunity to come and meet with people you wouldn't necessarily, like, in a fairly intimate space, wouldn't necessarily get to interface with. So I think that this is a really great opportunity for people. But I would love for that message to get out more.
I agree completely, and that can be very easily done and put into a pamphlet that also has a safety message too. Flip side. Who are we? You know, mm-hmm. when do we meet? We've always met on the first Monday. It's a pretty straightforward schedule. All right.
So imprint those vests with a QR code to Traffic Safety Board.
All right, looks like he, that, anybody else have any other old business? Any other business?
The only other business I have is next meeting is first Monday in July. I will be out of town. Traditionally, the board has postponed summer meetings, at least July, taking July and August off, postponed to September. I will be forming the subcommittee. I would like us to be meeting over the course of the summer, so there will be activity in that regard. But I won't be here for July unless we find a different date and want to go through that.
I mean, we can't really, can we vote or make a decision on that?
Can,
I mean,
yeah.
We could, you know, circulate an email to see.
So I should note, I'll notify everyone that there's
a
conflict on my end, and that I would propose that we postpone, that just cancel the July meeting.
Yeah.
And if people have thoughts for August, we can just wait to see when the, you know, 2 weeks in advance of the August meeting, mm-hmm. I can send a quick query. People are off and out of town. Then otherwise we can meet in September.
Yeah. I think we'll agree on that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Sounds good.
I will do that then. Thank you.
All right. Would anyone like some vests? You have to carry them home.
I saw Lieutenant Safarth over the weekend at our daughter's dance recital.
Oh, cool.
So he is out there, but he apologized. He had a conflict.
No, yeah, it's totally cool. He emailed me. It's okay.
Anybody like to make a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you, everybody.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Good thing we didn't have more people.
Adam, are you related to the Deetses of New Paltz?
I get that a lot. I've met a few times, and I'm actually more closely related to the stadium, believe it or not. And it's a different spelling.
Okay.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
I know a lot of, most of the Deetses in New Paltz.
8-10.